Awesome. Awesome. Rob does that for us every year here at Hoboken Grace, and mainly because compassion has been a huge part of his journey. And he started off and said, "My name's Rob, if you don't know me." If you don't know him, you need to get to know him. Anytime you get a chance to, if you get a chance to be able to pull him aside and hear his story and what God's done in his life, it is truly, truly amazing. And he is an incredible, incredible part of our family and what we're able to do inside of our community. And so if you get a chance, make sure you go back there and visit the table. One of the things that Rob didn't talk to you about is the fact that this journey for him began years and years ago while he was still a college student. And I know you look at Rob and you think he's still a college student, but he actually isn't. But even as a student, God began to give him this incredible heart for impacting people's lives. And so he just started sponsoring kids. I don't even know how many kids he sponsors now, but he just started picking them up. And he's been bringing this to our church, and it has been a really beautiful thing to see this explode inside of our church family. Where there are so many of us now who are sponsoring Compassion Children. If you aren't, you're just missing out. We love it. My wife and I, our family, we sponsor a little boy named Adrian, and it's just incredible. We actually set it up where the letters that go back and forth don't come from us, but they actually come from our oldest son, Caden, which makes for some interesting letters, some really, really interesting letters. And he gets so frustrated. He's like, "Just write him and ask him why he can't call me. Like, I want to FaceTime with him." And I'm like, okay, there's a lot you need to learn about the world and the little bubble you're growing up in. So, but it's amazing. And I encourage you, even if you're just check it out, go back there, see what Compassion is about. There's all sorts of packets. You can be able to see the kids that you're sponsoring and be able to step into a kid's life and really, for very little, be able to change someone's life, which is what, right? This is what we do. This is the mission that we've been given is to change the world around us as we step into people's lives and demonstrate the love of Jesus Christ, that Jesus Christ loves every single one of us, no matter who we are, no matter where we are. And so I hope that you'll check that out. For those of you who are with us for the first time, I just want to take a second to introduce myself. My name is Chris. I'm really excited that you're with us this morning, and you've kind of stepped into a unique Sunday because not just because of Compassion Sunday, but because usually here at Hoboken Grace, our conversations are self-contained, and each week we have a conversation that kind of stands on its own. But if you were with us last week, you know that we ended with a "to be continued." And we got to that point in the conversation, and so many of you are like, "Oh," and I know you think that I set you up. And some of you went out last week like frustrated. "Man, he set us up." That's actually not true. I just ran out of time. And it was funny. I knew I had to stop because if I didn't, Dana was just going to get really, really mad at me because all of her songs would be cut from the service. So, but I walked off stage and Dana said to me, she said, "You didn't do that on purpose, did you?" I said, "No." And she's like, "That messed up our planning for the next 6 weeks, right?" And I said, "Yeah." So she was still frustrated with me. It didn't matter. But this last week, as we walked into this incredible truth and we got about halfway through it, we were looking at this amazing thing that God does in our lives where he steps in and says, listen, not only am I going to bring you freedom as it pertains to your past, and this idea of forgiveness. Not only am I going to bring you freedom as it pertains to how our identities can enslave us and we're working to be able to prove who we are and our value and our worth and our significance. He says, not only have I come to free you from the past and all these identities that can enslave us, but then he also steps in and says, I've also come to free you from the weight of your future. I've also come to free you from all of that pressure of the future. And last week we began to look at this and how for all of us, we live in this world that tells us, no, you're responsible. You can create your own future, but we live in a world where we can't control the future. And so we live with this tension of trying to make sure that we can figure it out, and we have to know where to be and when to be and make sure that we make the right decisions and the right career and the right degree and the right... And we live with this unbelievable weight of the future. And into that, Jesus comes in and says, no, listen, not only have I come to deal with your past, but I've come to deal with your future. You don't have to live that way any longer. And he said some powerful things to us last week. We see these unbelievable promises. John 10:10, it says, the thief's purpose is to steal, kill, and destroy. My purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. He's talking about their future. He says, listen, I'm here, guys, to deal with and to lead you into the future. You need to understand something. I have a future that I have planned for you, and it's rich and satisfying. It's far better than this future that you're trying to create that you can't even control. And not only is he talking about their eternal future, but he's talking about their future here and now. And so just a couple chapters later, he's talking to them about how he's going to do this in their life. John 14:26, it says, but when the Father sends the Advocate as my representative, that is the Holy Spirit, he will teach you everything and remind you of everything I have told you. He says, listen, guys, listen. I've come to deal with your future, and I'm going to go away, but there's going to come another. He's going to come into your life, and he's here to lead you and guide you into that future. And he's going to use my word. We talked about last week. This is the tool that the Spirit uses to be able to lead you into the future. He says, so here's what I want you to do. I want you to follow him. And if you'll follow him, he'll lead you into that future. And we looked at this beautiful, really unbelievable promise that God has given us, that you don't have to live with that weight anymore. And for so many of us, even as we walk through this past week, we're just constantly living with that weight. And you're looking at your job situation and saying, should I leave? Should I stay? And there's this incredible weight of you have to make the right decision. Why? Because you're the one who creates your own future. So don't screw it up. And Jesus steps in and says, no, don't you understand? I came to set you free. Not just from the past, but from the future. And so rather than you living the rest of your life like you have to figure it out, rather than you living the rest of your life like you have to know things that you don't know, he says, you follow me. And as we left off last week, we left off with how? Well then how? From the beginning of this series, we've been looking at this process of how. In Ephesians 4, verse 22, Paul's talking to the church at Ephesus about this, and he's trying to teach them about this, and he's introducing them to this process. He says, here's what I want you to do. I want you to throw off your old sinful nature and your former way of life, which is corrupted by lust and deception, all these lies, right, that are built up in the way that you used to live. He says, instead, let the Spirit, again, he's talking about the Spirit, the one who's going to lead us into the future, let the Spirit renew your thoughts and attitudes, put on your new nature, created to be like God, truly righteous and holy. He says, okay, here's the process, guys. As you're looking at what Jesus has done in your life, you're going to have to walk through a process where you take off what you used to believe and you put on the truth of what Jesus is teaching you. And so last week we came to this point and said, okay, well then how? How do I put off all of those worries, those things that are constantly, maybe not on the forefront of my mind, but they're constantly in the back of my mind, of making sure that I'm in the right place in the right time and I'm talking to the right people? How do I take off that idea that I'm the one who creates my future, and how do I begin to put on the truth that if I listen to him, that he wants to, that he's excited about, that he sent his Spirit to lead me into this future that he has in store for me? How do you begin to do that? How do we become that follower that we talked about last week? Or as Paul talks about it, the worshiper, right? That one who's so enamored by someone that they just want to be near them. They just want to follow in their footsteps. They just want to do what they do. They want to live the way that they live. They want to be like them in any way, shape, or form that they can. How do we become that worshiper of him? And I think really when you look at that picture that Paul gives us of a worshiper, this person who's enamored by someone, I think that's actually where it begins. I think at the beginning of this journey of releasing our future, of actually letting go of the idea that I'm going to create it and grabbing hold of this reality that he's going to lead me into it, I think the beginning of that journey of putting off and putting on, it really has to do with and is built around the idea that we become enamored with Christ. That we become overwhelmed by him, that we become obsessed with him, that we become worshipers, that we're just constantly blown away by who he is and what he's done. This is why it's so important what we do here on a weekly basis as we come together on Sunday mornings, because what we're doing as we come together on Sunday mornings is that we are reminding each other over and over and over and over and over again of just how amazing he is. And it's not just that I'm reminding you, but the people sitting next to you are reminding you. We're all reminding each other of just how amazing God is. And when you begin to practice that on a consistent basis, it changes you. It begins to change the way you look at him. It begins to change the way that you engage and live your life. And when you walk in here on Sunday mornings, we talk about what we do as worship. And the truth is, you can worship in everything that you do. But as we engage the songs that we engage, the reason that we do that is specifically for this purpose, to remind each other of how great God is. And there's two things or two ways in which we get to engage the songs that we sing and what we do here on Sunday morning. The first way is that this is an incredible opportunity for us to be able to respond to him. And so as we walk in here on Sunday morning, as we begin to sing these songs, and as we go into silence, and as we walk through the conversation, as we engage each other, this is an incredible opportunity for us to be able to respond to him for what he's done for us. And so we have this outlet to be able to come in and just thank him for who he is and what he's done. And at the heart of worship, there's a response, right? It's, Jesus, this is what you've done for me. And so I want to celebrate you. But then there's a second aspect to it as well. There's a flip side to it. Because sometimes you walk in here and you're excited about what he's done, you realize what he's done, and so you're just celebrating him. But then there's other times that you walk in here and you can't remember anything that he's done. And your week has been so bad, or your morning has been so bad that it has been driven from your mind completely. And sometimes you walk in and your heart is passionate about him, and sometimes you walk in and you feel like your heart is dead. I know you guys think I walk in here every Sunday just excited to be here, excited to see you, excited to welcome you. That is not true. And sometimes it is. But other times I walk in here and I hear people talking about things, but man, there's just nothing inside of me. And it's just been a tough week, or there's been, I walk in and have a tough conversation. I'm like, and it's really easy for me, it's really easy for you to forget how great he is. And one of the beautiful things that we get to do every week as we come together is that we get to remind each other of it. We get to remind each other, no, I know that's where you are right now. I know this is how you feel right now. But look at who he is. This is why I love soundcheck here at Hoboken Grace. And I'll walk in here and the band's starting to play through things. And I'll walk in with nothing inside of me. But as they begin to sing and as I listen to the words and interact with the words of those songs, and I see them up here celebrating him. You guys know, I'm an emotional person. And I'll begin to interact with that. And I'll find myself down here. Escape back to the back over here. Just overwhelmed again by him. Overwhelmed by him. Last week, I talked to you about how I grew up as a worshiper of Michael Jordan. And how I was enamored by him. I just wanted to be like him. I would do anything to be like him. Many of you grew up the same. One of the things that allowed our culture to develop so many worshipers of Michael Jordan, I don't know if, and we talked about last week, I told you I thought about bringing in the commercial, Be Like Mike. You guys know the Gatorade commercial, Be Like Mike. It's almost all of us would recognize it if we heard it. Even if we began to hear the intro to it, we would recognize it. And one of the reasons why Michael Jordan was able to develop so many worshipers worshipers to the point where his shoes are still the most popular shoe long after he stopped playing basketball. One of the reasons why he was able to develop that is what was happening at the time in our culture as it pertained to commercials. And Gatorade and Hanes and all of these different people came to us over and over and over again and presented us over and over and over again of reminders of how great Michael Jordan is. And so they put together these videos that would show us all of his best moves. And they put together, and not only did they put them together, but then they showed them to us over and over and over and over and over and over again so that we would never forget how great he is. That's what we do on Sundays. That's what we do on Sundays. We come together. And we come together in this room. We come together in this space. And we just remind each other over and over and over and over and over again. You might feel like he's abandoned you this morning, but he hasn't. You might feel like he's given up on you, but he hasn't. You might feel like he can't take you out of where you are this morning, but he can. And we just remind each other of it over and over and over again so we can never forget. We can never forget. See, this isn't just the space where we get to worship. This is where we develop each other as worshipers. We help each other become enamored with him. Man, I just want to be like. I just want to be like him. I just want to be near him. I just want something in some way, shape, or form to be a little bit more like him. It's the space where we get to develop each other as worshipers. Which is why I just want to take a second to talk to those of you who are on live stream. And I love live stream. I love that we do live stream. I love that you're able to be with us no matter where you are. I love the fact for those who are part of our family that no matter where you travel for business, you never have to be away from our conversation. But for some of you on live stream, you've made this your church. That's not what it means to be part of God's family. You need to be in a space where you can be reminded, not just by me from a stage, but where you can be reminded by the people who are sitting next to you that this is how great he is. This is how amazing he is. You need to hear that from them. You need to experience that in them. And they need that from you. I just want to challenge you. Livestream can't be your only experience of his family. You need to be here. What we do here is important. Because it's our chance to be able to remind each other over and over and over again. This is how amazing he is. This is also why we do something that some of you take part in on a weekly basis. Others of you don't. Cindy was talking about a little bit ago, this idea of the Lord's Supper or communion. One of the reasons why we do that is so that we continue to become enamored with who Jesus Christ is, with the beauty and the wonder of who Jesus Christ is. And so around the space, you see we have tables set up with bread and with juice for you to be able to go and remember. Let me take you to a passage that explains why it is that we do this on a weekly basis. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 23 says this, and you'll find this passage on each of these tables. It says, "For I pass on to you what I received from the Lord himself." And Paul is talking to the church. He says, listen, as I've interacted with Jesus, he's told me that this is what he wants for you to do. He says, "On the night that he was betrayed, the Lord Jesus took some bread and gave thanks to God for it. Then he broke it in pieces and said, 'This is my body, which is given for you.'" And Jesus, he gives this to Paul, and Jesus says, "Listen, on the night that I was betrayed, I sat all of the disciples down and I said to them, 'Here's the deal. I want for you to do something to remember me.'" And you guys don't understand what's about to happen, but I want to give you a picture of what's about to happen. So he takes the bread and he breaks it. And he says, "Here's the thing. My body is going to be broken for you so that you can be made whole. My body's going to be broken for you so that all of the stuff that's behind you, all of the brokenness that's behind you, that it can be restored." He says, "This is my body, which is given for you. Do this to remember me." He says, "In the same way, he took the cup of wine after supper, saying, 'This cup is the new covenant between God and his people, an agreement confirmed with my blood. Do this to remember me as often as you drink it. He's also sitting at the table. He takes the cup and says, listen, here's the deal, guys. My blood is going to be shed for you to make you clean. We talked about this in our identity, this idea that you're going to be made clean and holy and beautiful and pure. He says, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take this. I want you to do this over and over and over again to remember me. He says, for every time you eat this bread and drink this cup, you're announcing the Lord's death until he comes again. And the passage is interesting because in the passage, Paul's writing to the church at Corinth, and he's talking to them about how they're kind of screwing up this idea of communion in the Lord's Supper, and they're not really taking it or interacting with it in the way that they should. And so he's calling them back to what it's supposed to be. And he says, here's what this is about. It's about you remembering what Jesus Christ has done for you. It's about you going and consistently over and over and over again, remembering that his body was broken so that you could be made whole, so that you could be forgiven, that his blood was shed so that you could be made pure and holy and clean. He says, so I want you to remember that. And when you read through the passage, you begin to realize that the way we do communion is nothing like the way that the early church did communion. Because in the passage, as they're taking the Lord's Supper, some of them are getting drunk. With the way that we do it, that would be really hard, right? I mean, you'd have to be over there just like shot glass after shot glass. It would take you the whole service, basically. And so you realize it's not the same. As a matter of fact, when you begin to really study through the Lord's Supper, I think that what Jesus was doing when he's sitting at that table was not something that was supposed to happen inside of church services, but he's actually saying to them, because he picks two things that would have been on every Jewish table. And he doesn't say, hey, listen, guys, when you get together in really big gatherings, this is what I want you to do. No, he says, guys, this is what I want you to do. Every time you take this bread, and he takes the bread and he breaks it. I think he was talking about just consistently every time that they sat down for a meal. This is what I want you to do. I want you to remember me. I want you to remember every time that you take this cup that my blood was shed for you so that you could be made clean and pure. As he continues the passage, he talks to them about this problem that's taken place inside of their church. He says, so anyone who eats this bread and drinks this cup of the Lord unworthily is guilty of sinning against the body and blood of the Lord. That is why you should examine yourself before eating the bread and drinking the cup. And it's interesting because I think for some of you, because of the fact that you've maybe been taught this passage in a way that's inaccurate, you don't take communion. I was taught this passage growing up that when it comes to taking communion, that you need to examine yourself, exactly what this passage said. And I was taught that as you look back on your week, you need to ask whether or not you lived a good life or not, whether or not you did well that week. And if you did well that week, then you could take communion. But if you didn't, then you needed to pass this week. Some of you were taught the very same thing. It couldn't be farther from what Paul's trying to teach the Corinthian church, but that's what we were taught. And so for some of you, as you come together, you look at your life and you look at the table and you're like, you know what, I can't this week. As a matter of fact, for some of you, you just gotten to the point where you're like, I just can't. I'm not good enough to do that. You know what's crazy about that idea? What's just insane about that idea? It's crazy that there would ever be a day that we would sit in this room and think that we had lived well enough this past week to take part in remembering what he's done for us. The truth is that if taking communion has to do with how well you've lived this past week, none of us deserve to ever be able to go and remember. That's not what he's teaching. The whole process of communion is a process of remembering, examining your life, and realizing, listen, I don't belong here. The reason Paul calls them to examine their life is because inside the Corinthian church, there were those who believed that they actually belonged at the table. As a matter of fact, there were those who believed that they belonged there more than others. And so he's writing them, he says, you're doing it in a way that's unworthy of what's been done for you. What you need to realize, what all of us need to realize, is that as we examine our life, none of us belong here, but his body was broken and his blood was shed so that we would always be welcomed at the table. No matter who we are, And he's calling them into this process to remember the grace that they'd experienced, to realize, no, I don't belong here. I don't belong here, but his blood has washed me pure and clean. But his body was broken so that I could be made new. And so we go and we take the bread and we take the juice. And we're overwhelmed again. We're overwhelmed again by how amazing his love is. We're overwhelmed again by just how far he's gone to pursue us. That he didn't just show us grace in one moment, that he shows us grace every single day, every single week, over and over and over again. And he gives us this practice. He says, listen, I want you to come together and I want you to remind each other. I want you to be a living commercial, just reminding each other of how great God is. I want you to remember over and over and over and over again what I've done for you and how my blood was shed for you. He's talking to them about these practices of becoming enamored with Christ. You're just overwhelmed. I can't believe what he's done for me. I can't believe how great he is. The more enamored you become with Christ, the more willing you're going to be to release your future. See, it begins with this. It begins with becoming that worshiper where we're just blown away. So much so that we're just like, here's my future. It starts with becoming enamored with him. But not only do we become enamored with him, but then, number two, we make our experience of him our number one priority. Above and beyond anything else. We make our experience of him our number one priority. When you look at the scriptures and when Jesus is talking to his followers, he says this in John chapter 15, verse 4. He says, remain in me and I will remain in you. For a branch cannot produce fruit if it is severed from the vine. And you cannot be fruitful unless you remain in me. He says, listen, guys, when it comes to the future and the fruit that I have in store for you, he says, the reason you're going to be able to do that is because you remain in me. He says, you remain close to me. You remain in me. And when you do, you're going to be able to produce unbelievable fruit. The future is going to be amazing. And what's going to happen in your life is going to be fruitful and beautiful. He says, but apart from me, you can do nothing. He says, you can try to do it on your own. You can try to create your own future, but you know it and I know it, guys. It's not going to work out. And what I have in store for you, you're never going to be able to experience it. So here's what I want for you to do. Above everything else, here's what you prioritize. You remain in me. And you make your experience of me the number one thing in your life. When you begin to believe and you step into this relationship with God, you say, okay, God, I'm going to give you my future. I'm going to release my future. I'm going to stop living the way that I've lived where I'm the one who has to create it. I'm giving it to you. When that becomes a reality in your life, your time with God will be something that you cannot miss. Why? Because my entire future depends on it. My whole future depends on it. If you're still creating your own future, your time with God will be nice. And it'll be nice when you can add it in. But when it becomes, when you step into a relationship with him where my future, he's leading me into my future, it changes the way that you look at your time with him. It changes the way that you look at your experience of him. Why? Because if I'm not experiencing him, I'm never going to know where it is I'm supposed to go. This is one of those indicators along the way. And along this journey, there's all sorts of indicators. And they're not necessarily things to become frustrated about. They just let you know, okay, you are here. It's almost like one of those road maps. You step into a mall and all of us are looking for a kiosk, right? So we can find the map and where's the red dot? Okay, you are here. And you're looking at the different stores to figure out, okay, you're looking for all these indicators of where am I? Along this journey, there's all sorts of those little indicators. This is one of those. I'll give you an example of one that I saw in my wife's life. just a couple weeks ago. It was Easter morning, and as we were preparing for Easter, I was so excited about Easter because we had this awesome day planned, and we had some really cool things that we were doing in our service. Some of you guys experienced that, and as we're preparing for it, our kids ministry was a little bit low because we had this huge day planned. And so Rachel reached out to my wife and said, "Hey, listen, you know, could you help out in baby steps?" And so she said yes. She came back to me and she said, "Oh, I'm going to be in baby steps on Easter," which I know means that she's not going to actually be part of any of our services, because that means that after that she's got our kids and she's going to be at home. And so I was a little bit disappointed, and I was like, "Oh, like that means you're not going to be able to be actually in an Easter service." And she said something to me. She said, "It's Easter." I said, "Well, yeah." She said, if I'm not willing to serve on Easter, I don't get Easter." There are these little indicators. And she said, I was like, oh, you understand Easter. There are these, when you look at your life as it pertains to releasing your future, there are indicators in your life of whether or not you're carrying your future or whether or not you've given it to Him. When it comes down to it, and you're put in the situation of whether you have to finish that project for work or whether you're going to spend time with Him, if the project always takes priority, you're creating your future. You see, when you believe that He's leading you into your future, your time with Him will always take priority, because your future depends on it. At the beginning of the year, we introduced the experience plan. Some of you have seen it. Some of you have worked through it. If you haven't seen it, on our website, it's at the very bottom of our webpage. It's on our homepage. We've got a blog there. You're going to be able to link to this. You can pull it up right now. You can pull it up during your week. But this whole thing is about planning your experience of God. Not just hoping that it happens, but walking into your journey and planning your experience with God. Why? Because my future depends on it. There are all sorts of reasons why you need to be executing a consistent experience plan. One is Jesus Christ is the lover of your soul, and everything that you crave in this world is found in Him and Him alone. But then also, number two, if you're not experiencing Him, He's not going to be able to lead you into the future. Your whole future depends on it. Jesus steps in and says, "Listen, you don't have to live this way anymore. This weight that you've been living under of how you're going to create what's next, even though you don't know what's coming," He says, "No, stop. Come to me. I'm going to place my Spirit in you. Come to me. Listen to Him. Follow Him." So many of us, we're looking at God and saying, "God, you're not really telling me what's going on in the future," but we're not making our experience of Him a priority. I remember in my life, there was this moment where God just made this so clear, in kind of a mean way, to be honest with you. I was working in the city at the time, and I was trying to decide whether or not I was going to stay in the city, and I'd been offered a job there, and it was a great job. And I was working through it and going back and forth. And I was praying about it and asking God, like, "Okay, God, what do you want me to do? Should I stay here? Should I leave? And I prayed about it for weeks. But to be honest with you, when it came to my experience of Him, it was really just me praying and asking this question. I wasn't spending time in His Word. I wasn't listening. As a matter of fact, the plan that I had laid out as far as how I was going to work through His Word, I'd kind of put it to the side. And I remember exactly where I was. I was just on the outskirts of NYU's campus, and we had a project that was going on there that day, and the people who were supposed to be a part of it were a little bit late, and so I decided to sit down, and I was just going to begin reading where I had left off, and I began to read through what I had planned to read actually weeks ago. And I began to read through it, and I came to this passage where Moses is interacting with God about the nation of Israel. And as I came to this passage and as I saw how Moses interacted with God about the nation of Israel, I realized that I didn't have that heart for the city, and this wasn't where God had me staying. And I came to that passage and it was crystal clear what God had for my future. And as I read that and as it hit me, the direction that God wanted me to go in, I heard God say just really subtly in the back of my mind, "You were supposed to read this 2 weeks ago." And the whole time I've been frustrated with him. "Why aren't you telling me where to go? Why? I'm talking to you. Why are you?" And he, just almost sarcastically in the back of my mind, "You were supposed to read this 2 weeks ago." But I had been trying to create my future as opposed to consistently coming and listening. Saying, "Okay, God, what do you have in store for me? What's next? What's next? What's next?" You have to become enamored with him. You have to prioritize above all else your experience of him. And here's the thing, guys. When you begin to do this, you know what God's going to do? I promise you this. And it doesn't sound hopeful, but it's unbelievably hopeful. You know what God's going to do? He's going to call you to make a decision that will look like it is going to destroy the future you're trying to create. It will. You'll begin to interact with him about this. And you've been working to become this person, and you've been working to get this promotion, or you've been working to, and you begin to say to him, "Listen, God, I'm going to give you my future." Without fail, I've experienced this in almost everyone's life that I've discipled. Without fail, God's going to come into your life and ask you to make a decision that looks like it's going to destroy everything that you've been trying to build. And in that moment, you're going to have to decide. Am I going to create my future, or am I going to follow him? And unfortunately for most of us, in that moment, we take it back. And you're looking at that promotion, but God comes in and says, "Listen, you're not going to be able to be the dad I created you to be if you take that." "Yeah, but this is what I've been working for. This is what it's all about. This is what... But you're not going to be able to be the dad that I created you to be. That's not what I have for you. And you're going to have to decide. If you choose to go your way, you're going to have to continue living your life in the cage. You're going to have to continue living with the pressures of trying to make it work. But Jesus says, no, if you will listen to me and trust me and follow me, you can leave that behind. I've seen this happen with people who get serious about living inside of biblical community. And they realize, I can't be a part of dinner group and actually excel in my job because my job asked me to be there every single night, even when even without a single night to be able to attend a group. But God steps in and says, "No, listen, I want for you to make this a priority. I want for you to be a part of a group. I want for you to have a conversation with your boss." And they have to make that decision. You don't have to live with the pressure of the future. And as I've watched individual after individual, some of them walked away, but some of them took God up. Some of them took God up on his promise that if I follow him, even though it looks like I'm destroying my future, even if I follow him, he has something better in store for me. And it's been amazing to see. How God has delivered on that over and over and over again.
Release your future. Release it. Become enamored with him. And prioritize above everything else your experience of him. He will not let you down. He will lead you into the best future you could have ever hoped for. Will you pray with me? Father, today as we come together to remind each other of how incredible you are, I pray that as we walk through these next two songs, I pray that that would really be true here in this space. That not only would we worship, but that we would help one another become worshipers as we remind each other of just how amazing you are, of how you're able to do far beyond what we could have imagined. Father, I pray that as we come together in this space and we talk about the priority of listening to you, of allowing your spirit to be able to speak into our lives and to create space and time for that to happen, I pray that we wouldn't just be reminded of it today, but that as we go out of here this week, that would become, that we would implement it and practice it. That we would release our future to you today. And step into this week, listening to you. Where would you have us go? What would you have us do? What do you want this to look like? And may we experience the freedom that you gave your life to make possible. In Jesus' name, amen.